News, weather, sports, and more. It's Drive Time Live with Mark Hahn on KSCJ.
My guest here is Sargis Sangare. He is a Lieutenant Colonel, retired U.S. Army. He's been a guest on the show many times before, in one of which, respect to your opinion about what is going on here in Turkey and with Turkey in Syria after the Kurds.
Mark, it's good to be here. What is happening in Turkey is the manifestation of a contract that was reached, an agreement a year ago, between all the players in the region, to include U.S., Turkey, Russia, Iran, Syrian government. Israelis understood what had to happen. I think the pullout was going to take place. The problem we were having is that the PKK Kurds, in this case, who are the Kurds that are conducting terrorist operations and actions inside the Turkish borders, were not moving off of the terrain that was initially negotiated for during a possibility of getting to a functional peace from last year. In this case, when we realized, when videotapes surfaced as of March of this year, that you had PKK officials and other Kurds that had walked Iranian intel officers through the U.S. basings that we had created for them, literally pointing out the disposition of the U.S. forces on the ground, and us realizing that they had already struck a deal with the Assad regime, it was very clear to us that U.S. was going to end up on a losing end of this operation, given the fact that we were just pouring money and effort, losing soldiers on the ground, while Russia, Assad, the Kurds, Iranians were expanding their footprint. The only way we were going to be able to assert our force structure capability and our efforts from a foreign policy perspective in Syria was with a pullout, which now brought the Turks in, who were itching to get into that region going back to the 80s. Now it puts the NATO and Russia at a point where Russia has to deal with our NATO ally, who is currently operating in northern Syria.
Most of the time when we've heard about the Kurds, these were the people in northern Iraq that Saddam Hussein had gassed and had attacked. What is the difference between the Kurds in northern Iraq to the Kurds that are in Syria? Are the Syrian Kurds, are they bad guys? Are they terrorists? Or are they the ones who were in support with the United States? Because the problem that people have is that they feel as though we've left these Kurds dangle in the wind, just kind of like, you know, after we pulled out of Vietnam, there were a lot of folks who had helped U.S. troops in Vietnam, but they were left there too. As many as they could were brought back, but still.
The Kurds are good and bad depending on what the situation is and what type of a deal they could strike for themselves. We started courting the Kurds going back to the 60s. The Kurds, we realize, are massive numbers. We realize that they're very tribal. At that time, the formula was for us to exert our capability in the region, given it was the United States and Russia fighting over the territory, was to try to have a force structure capability that was willing to be destabilizing factor for the various different governments within the region, to include Turkey, Syria, Iraq, and Iran. It was a way of means for us to say, if you do not abide by what we believe should be a functional peace within the region, then these individuals will be armed and they will start causing chaos internal to your structures. The Kurds are tribal. In fact, in the 1990s, when we became a de facto air force for the Kurds, the first thing that they did, in this case, the Turks that belonged to Jalal Talabani and the Kurds that belonged to Barzani, they turned their guns against each other and tune of 10 to 20,000 killed along the Gangil mountain ranges in northern Iraq. We ended up bringing him to the United States under the force of the Department of State and stated to them that you need to start working together. In this case, it led to a point where we finally were able to, through the support that we give to the Kurds to allow them to have a regional government. Unfortunately, the Kurds never grew out of their tribal mentalities. As an example, in northern Syria, the Kurds who want to be with the Syrian government that are fighting under the Free Syrian Army, which is getting its funding through Turkey, but that money is coming out of Qatar because Qatar has its economic interests it's fighting for in a new Syria once Syria starts rebuilding itself after this war, are fighting against the PKK Kurds. The PKK Kurds are a terrorist organization based on the U.S. designation, NATO, 28 European countries plus in Turkey. In northern Iraq, the Barzani Kurds actually are supporting the Turkish military force structures that are conducting airstrikes against these PKK positions in northern Iraq. So Kurds are fighting Kurds there too. But at the same time, they're also supporting each other to an extent. So while the Barzani Kurds are fighting against the PKK Kurds in northern Iraq, at the same time, they're sending supplies and equipment to the PKK Kurds to fight against the Turks in Syria, given the fact that it is an economic process for them as far as money and transport of oil is concerned. I think what you are seeing in the region is that once Barzani decided to push for a referendum and they break away from Iraq, we realize that what may have worked to our advantage going back to the 60s of destabilizing all these nations is not the formula by which we have to conduct operations on a diplomatic basis for the future of the region. And although we explained that to the Kurds were reluctant to listen to us. And this is a manifestation of the Kurds not understanding that they need to become part of the fabric of the countries they are currently within.
My guest is retired Lieutenant Colonel Sargis Sangari, and we're talking about Turkey involvement in Syria and the Kurds we've been talking about. President Trump took a lot of heat over withdrawing troops. I think there's a weariness, and it's even stated in here in this newsletter, there's a weariness in the United States of our troops, our young men and women, our assets, our precious blood being spilled in a part of the world that has been fighting for a long, long time. Do we need to be involved in a lot of the tribal warfare, as you mentioned with the Kurds? Do we need to be involved with these conflicts, or should they settle themselves in the Middle East by without U.S. influence?
Eventually, they have to. Look, if you go back to even looking at 2016, American Enterprise Institute pointed out some realistic facts of our foreign policy, where at that time a Kurdish official within the Barzani political party stated that we need to fight the Shiites and not defeat Islamic State. The Obama administration responded by giving them approximately $400 million. At the same time, the same Kurds that were saying we should fight the Shia, in this case Iran as a threat, give us more money, turned down and took some of that money and gave to what is today the Islamic State fighters anti-tank weapon systems. In that case, at that time, the Cornet anti-tank missiles. At the same time, fast forward to where we are today, the Kurds are saying, well, Turkey is the bad guy, and we need to concentrate on Turkey, although we cleaned up ISIS off the battlefield and we gave the keys to all the ISIS captives to the Kurds. Today, if the Kurds are releasing these ISIS captors, it tells us that they already had an agreement with them too, possibly in the past, because it seems that they're more worried about Turkey, a NATO ally, than they are about ISIS operators. The United States was in Syria with no legal authority to be there on the international scale. We went there to defeat ISIS. Russia was in Syria because Syrian government, although we may not agree with the government, had invited them to be there legally in accordance to international norms. Iran, although we do not agree with Iran, Iran was invited by the Syrian government to be there. The only one who was on the ground who wasn't supposed to be there after these operations to clear out ISIS was the U.S. in violation of international norms. Turkey has a right to be in northern Syria because of the fact that they have terrorist operations with the PKK Kurds being conducted inside of Turkey. So right now, by us pulling out, we reset everything in accordance to the international norms and policy, where this fight becomes a Turkish and Syrian fight over the borders. And in this case, I think what will end up happening is that the PKK Kurds will eventually move down south. They have no choice. Otherwise, they will be killed. And you will see an Arab structure being established between the Turks and the Kurds, where the Kurdish PKK, if he wants to conduct operations within the borders of Turkey, a NATO ally, they would have to go through the Arab corridor in order to be able to get into Turkey to conduct those operations. It will give an opportunity for these pieces to be apart from each other, so they won't kill each other in a possible, hopefully functional peace in the future. The brokers within the region may be Russia, but Russia is losing out in this process because of the money it has to spend to maintain the peace within the region, and they will learn the same lessons we have to learn in Iraq today as to how to operate with these characters.
You thought that they would have learned their lesson in Afghanistan, and then, of course, we took over in that, and they could go home and rest, is what it is. Lieutenant Colonel Sarkis Sangare, retired from the U.S. Army, want to leave and ask you here while we have just a few minutes left, tell us about the Assyrian Project.
The Assyrian Project started for us when the Assyrian genocide began. So if you go back to since 2003, when we first initially went into Iraq, with all the force structures that were there, the 82nd Airborne, Joint Terrorism Task Force, even the JSOC, Navy Tasking Units, NATO, even our partners from Australia, Korea, even Japan had individuals on the ground. The Assyrian Christians went from 1.5 million to almost 150,000. And that was because the global players for economic interests kept on pushing the Assyrian Christians to have to either be under the Kurdish regional government structures, which occurs being their historical enemies, or under the Iraqi government force structures, in this case the Hashish Shabi, which were the old Quds Force, Iranian-aligned militias. The Assyrian Project started with us supporting the military families of Assyrian forces that were independent of these both structures fighting in Assyria and never playing to save the roots of Christianity in both Iraq and Syria. Today, that force structure has been removed off the battlefield because we don't want to put them in the fight between the Turks, I should say, between the Kurds and the Arabs within the region. But we are still supporting the military families until we're hoping that one day, in accordance with the Iraqi constitution, that the same thing that was allocated, empowered, and awarded to the Sunni Muslim Kurds could be awarded to a regional location for the Christians in order for all the minorities within that area to be able to thrive and survive. This will allow the Iraqi government finally to be able to take the steps needed to become a viable member of the national community.
Very good. Lieutenant Colonel, retired U.S. Army, Lieutenant Colonel Sarkis Sangare. How do they find out more about the Assyrian Project real quick?
They could go to United Assyrian Appeal. It is a 501c3. And they could also go to the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement, which is the educational piece in support of that 501c3.
Very good. Thank you for being my guest, and thank you for your expert opinion on what's going on in the Middle East, especially with Syria and Turkey. Lieutenant Colonel Sarkis Sangare, thank you, sir, and have a great night.
Thank you, Mark, and God bless.